Haggard. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
You know, that's one of my favorite hymns because it's so meaningful. And it just tells a lot about what God is going to do and what he's doing for us now. Linda and I were just talking about, on the way up here, we were just talking about how awesome it is to know the truth of God. I mean, to know what we know, to know that we can have that confidence in God at all times. Even though we go through trials, he's always there. He's always going to watch over us, so we don't have to be afraid. We really don't. So, well, anyway, I wanted to greet everyone today and welcome to any guests and visitors that we have with us today, and all those on the phone hookup over in Monticello. And if Orrin Mountain's on right now, well, we're praying for you. He went through this skin surgery, and Mr. Martin went through that not too long ago, and I had some done myself, so we know kind of what it's like. And it can be easy, or it can be very difficult. It can last a long time, and but hang in there, Orrin, and everybody with whatever trials you're going through as well. That hymn fits very well with what I have in mind today. You know, we live in a very dangerous age. And we watch the news and we see the trends. We see what's going on. And it's growing more dangerous by the day, as we know. You know, the United States is withdrawing from around the world. And it had this responsibility, which it assumed during World War II and maintained for all these years up until now, to kind of keep the peace. Pax Americana, it's been called. And did a reasonably good job in doing that. But a vacuum has opened up, and it's being filled by very nefarious nations and individuals, leaders, bad actors, you might say, various groups that are taking full advantage of this vacuum, and they're trying to fill the space that's been left behind by the lack of leadership. They call it leading from behind, but it really isn't that. That's just a nice way of saying nobody's leading. Just kind of do your own thing. Go out in the world and do whatever you want. And we see this especially with the rise of radical Islamic terrorism that's taking place in our country. Saw San Bernardino, the terrible thing that took place over there. And just yesterday, the shooting of a police officer in Philadelphia, point-blank range. It's amazing the officer lived, and then he was able to take down this guy with his own weapon. But we see this taking place all around the world today, and we see these terrorist groups, and we know ISIS, we've heard that name, and it's growing in its power around the world today. Then you have terrorist promoting nations like Iran that are in other nations, Libya and other nations that are developing their potential in the world, and we see this all growing continually. In fact, terrorism is greater now than it was before the 2001 September 11th World Trade Center and Pentagon attacks. And there's no question that that is the way it is. It really is. We see that happening. Also, considering what's going on with Russia, with Putin and Russia, after having seized the Crimea, and now their war, or sort of a proxy war, taking place in Ukraine. That's been taking place, and no one's doing anything about it. Also, you see what's happening in North Korea, a very belligerent state, constantly trying to poke everyone in the eye, saying the other day that they exploded a hydrogen weapon. And that's to be determined whether that actually happened. They're looking into that right now. And then you have China with its imperialist intentions right now in the South China Sea, building islands in the open sea and claiming various islands that have been in dispute with Japan, and all of that that's going on right now. So there are nations around the world, especially in the Far East, that are really wondering if the United States is going to help them anymore. They protected them for all these years, so they don't know if they can depend on the United States any longer. Added to this, what do we see in the worldwide economy? It's dramatically slowing dramatically right now, which could lead to disastrous consequences of a global recession. And they say Europe is already in that situation, and the way the stock market is going, they're monitoring this, and that recession could be upon us or maybe already here. You know, you don't know until it's already been on you for a while. Or it could lead to something worse than that, a depression worldwide. The result of that could be growing unemployment, fewer jobs, and lower paying jobs, not just here in our country, but around the world. And that would fuel more discontent and more restlessness that's taking place already in the world right now, on top of all the other things that are happening. So it's quite a world that we live in. And all this is leading somewhere. It's leading to the emergence of a new and dark and disastrous international order that is on the horizon. And that one will result in a great and growing trouble and hatred and death everywhere in the world. So today let's look at what prophecy has to say about this and what's ahead for us. If you turn with me to Revelation 13, verse 1. You know, in an amazing vision, the Apostle John was transported forward in time, a time in which he witnessed and then later wrote about many really astonishing and troubling images and events. So we read about that here. This was a vivid dream that God gave to John the Apostle. Revelation 13, verse 1, "And I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horns ten crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name." Verse 4, it says, "They worshiped the dragon and gave authority to the beast, who gave authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" What kind of beast is this? So powerful, so colossal that it's to be worshipped. It's going to be worshipped in the future. Because of what? It can make war. It has vast military prowess. It's a beast that no one dares oppose. That's what's ahead. Well, this is nothing short of a titanic superstate, an economic, military, industrial complex that the Bible tells us is coming. It's so amazingly powerful that it literally evokes awe and worship among its subjects. That's how powerful and influential this will be. It's a mighty empire that rises to such vast and incredible power and prestige that it is really a world hyperpower. We talk about superpower, but really it's a hyperpower. The world will have never witnessed this kind of power before. The Apostle John saw this very beast in a vision. What should it mean to you and me? What should it mean to us? And what should we do about it? What are we supposed to do with this ahead of us today? So let's cover this subject today. The title of the sermon is The Beast, the Future, and You, Part 1. Now, I don't have a handout, as I often do, because there's just so many scriptures that we're going to take a look at today. But I do have something that I have brought previously, and I often, when I talk about prophecy, I bring this along. It's a chronology of prophetic biblical end time events. Now, most of you have had this before, but if you don't have a copy of it, you can pick one up at the information table in the back, or if you lost your copy or you just want another one, I have, I think, 7 or 8 copies back there. So you're welcome to pick it up, but it goes through all the events that have been laid out in the scriptures, and the scriptures are all there that's verified these points. So we're going to be talking about part of page 1 today, but there's a lot, many, many other prophetic events that will take place, especially during a 3.5 period, year period, that is the focus of end time events. It's not the entire focus, because there's more events that are going to take place prior to this 3.5 year period, but definitely this is something that, if you like a copy of that, you're welcome to get it later. So just want to mention that. So again, the Apostle John saw this beast in a vision, a vivid dream that God gave to him. But he was not the first of God's servants to have such a vision, such an amazing dream. Let's turn to Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 7. But hold your place there if you haven't already lost it. Hold your place there in Revelation 13, because we're going to come right back to it. But I just wanted to talk to you really briefly about, at this point, we'll go back to John later in the sermon today. But we want to take a look at what happened prior to John's vision. So many years before John lived, the ancient prophet Daniel saw a similar brutish and belligerent creature, similar to what John saw. And he had this, again, this vision directly from God. Daniel 7, verse 1, it says, "In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed." Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. He said, gave the main facts, so he probably saw a lot of other things in this vision, but he gives us the basic overview. So again, Daniel was transported forward in time to our day today. And like John, he wrote about these are very perplexing things, shocking events and images that he witnessed. And it was just very startling, hard to imagine. So let's move ahead here several verses and see how Daniel emotionally felt about this. How did it affect him emotionally, psychologically, after he recounted these events? Here in verse 15, we read that these baffled him. These really distressed him greatly. Daniel 7, verse 15. "I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit, within my body, and the visions of my head troubled me." Very grieved, very troubled he was. What was it that Daniel saw that was so awful, so upsetting to him? Well, he saw 4 powerful winds that were blowing upon a vast sea. Imagine that in your... I wish I had the PowerPoint today where you had images of all these things, but you're just going to have to use your imagination today. Sorry. When he witnessed this amazing thing, he really did. He saw 4, I guess you might call, nightmarish beast-like creatures rising up out of these turbulent waters. And he described that in verses 2 through 6, and we're going to go back to that later. But let's back up now a few verses to read about what Daniel saw next. Verse 7 of Daniel 7. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast. We're going to the fourth beast right now. There's three other ones, but we're going to go directly to the fourth and to see what this is like. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So this is an amazing creature. Amazing to see this. So Daniel's vision is very akin to what the Apostle John saw. Now let's go back to John's account in Revelation 13 and see what happened 700 years later after Daniel's prophecy. And then this is at the end of the first century now. Revelation 13, we're going to look at verse 2. So here John saw a similar brute creature to the one Daniel witnessed in his vision. Now let's learn more about this formidable, petrifying, scary creature, this beast. Here's what John wrote in Revelation 13, verse 2. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. So here is an exceedingly massive and strange creature, very frightful, very threatening, very imposing, very dominant. He saw this in the vision. It had great strength. It had great authority. And this many-headed, many-horned creature was given this authority by a malicious dragon. Now you have all these beasts and creatures, and what is this dragon? Well, let's go back. Let's back up one chapter to Revelation 12, verse 7. Revelation 12, verse 7. Now, we don't really need to speak. We don't have to speculate about what is meant by this dragon, which gives its power, its energy to this disgusting, menacing giant. Why is that? Why don't we have to wonder about it? Because the Bible is very clear about what this dragon is all about. Here in Revelation 12, verse 7, we read this. Describing the dragon, it says, "And war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon. And the dragon and his angels, fought. But they did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old, called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world, and he was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him." So the dragon is a symbol for none other than Satan, the devil, this maniacal, twisted, fallen angel. Satan was once an angel of light and goodness named Lucifer. He was at the very throne of heaven. But now he is called, in Ephesians 2, verse 2, the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the sons of disobedience. So this chief demon is described also in 2 Corinthians 4:4 as the god of this world. He influences powerfully the heads of nations and religious leaders everywhere throughout the world. He is also called in Revelation 12, verse 10, the accuser of the brethren. That's a key issue we're going to be discussing during this sermon and the next time I'm back with part two. He's also called in 1 Peter 5, verse 8. It says, as a roaring lion. He seeks out to destroy, to overwhelm and crush and devour anything in its path, in his path. So, with that said, what have we discovered so far? We have seen this many-headed, ten-horned beast, empowered and guided by this cruel, heinous, deceptive, fallen spirit being, Satan the devil. And Satan the devil hates with a vicious hatred, God, his creator. He hates all human beings as well. So what can we grasp as a result of all this, of this knowledge that we have already seen so far? It is that this beast that is controlled and given its power by Satan the devil, this serpent, will do everything in his power. This beast will do everything in his power to oppose God's way of life, including his laws, including his Sabbath and holy days. And Satan would love nothing better than to destroy the people of God. He is especially vicious toward the church of God, especially vicious and hostile to the loving, obedient brethren of God's family. And as a result, Satan the devil will inflame this coming beast system, which will be led by a human tyrant dictator, to stand in complete opposition to those who are performing the work of God on the earth, the faithful, righteous, godly righteous, true Christians. That's what Satan would love to do. He's going to do that. He's going to ramp up his efforts in the future. In fact, at the time of the end, which we are moving into right now, the beast will, as it tells us, make war with the saints. Make war. You know what war is all about. How vicious that is. Satan's going to do that with the saints. He's also going to attempt to fight Jesus Christ at his second coming. So yes, this beast and the power behind him, Satan the devil, is utterly absorbed and literally destroying you. Make that plain. He is after you. He wants to take you down. He wants to destroy you, rip you apart, limb from limb, spiritually speaking. Remember that. But as I said earlier, there's nothing we have to fear if we do what God wants us to do. But Satan is targeting, there's a big red target on your back right now and mine. He wants to destroy you spiritually, but he also wants to bring you down psychologically, emotionally, and if he can, physically as well. And he will do that if you allow that to happen to yourself. So then it's critical that we really truly comprehend the unbelievable, fierce nature, the destructive, murderous power that is looming just ahead of us prophetically. We need to know that. This beast system will rise up out of the sea, as we've read earlier. You know, in biblical terminology, the sea means populations, people, vast numbers of people. You look into the scriptures, that's what it means. Now, let's get some background about the surfacing, the emergence of this beast-like system that's going to be coming up in the future. Let's return to the book of Daniel now. Let's go back to Daniel, chapter 2, verse 31. Daniel chapter 2, verse 31. And this chapter contains the familiar story of Nebuchadnezzar's dream and Daniel's God-given interpretation of that dream. And again, it's perhaps some of us have gone through this one or two times or more, but it's always good to review so we know what we're dealing with. And those who are new or are young and maybe haven't really reviewed this, it's also a good thing for us to know these things. But here in Daniel 2, verse 31, it says, and now Daniel's talking to the king. He says, you, O king, were watching. He's describing the vision, the dream that Nebuchadnezzar saw. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar saw this dream, and he told all his advisors to come into, and he couldn't remember what the dream was. So he said, he told all of his advisors to come in and tell him what the dream was, and they couldn't do it. Well, anyway, Daniel took the job. Otherwise, all those guys would have been dead. But he took the job, and he says this. He tells him what he saw in this vision, and he explains it. He says, you, O king, were watching. Behold, a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. This image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. So in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, he witnessed this great image that towered high into the sky, a huge image. It was glistening, wonderful, beautiful reflection. Imagine the sun shining on this, the gold and the silver and the brass and the bronze. It must have been utterly magnificent to see this thing. He didn't know what it was all about. Daniel's telling him what it is. He goes on, he says, you, king, watched, verse 34, while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay, and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and gold were crushed together, became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. So, like a fast-falling meteorite, a stone came out of the sky and smashed the feet of this image on its feet, mixed iron and clay. And the image then buckled, and the impact of the iron and the brass and the silver and the gold hitting the ground seemed to totally disintegrate this great image. And it formed a vast pile, quantity of metallic dust on the ground. And then a wind came up and blew very strongly, propelling all these particles of metal out of sight. Imagine seeing this in vision. It would have scared any of us. It's so vivid. After that, in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and to his amazement, he saw this great stone that had smashed into the feet of the image begin to grow larger and larger and larger until it filled the entire earth. Daniel then said here in verse 36 of Daniel 2, this is the dream. Now we tell you the interpretation of it before the king. So he's told him what the dream was. And the king is, yep, that's what I saw. That's exactly what I saw. Now Daniel's going to interpret the dream for him. Verse 37, you, O king, are a king of kings. For the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wherever the children of men dwell, or the beasts of the field and the birds of the heaven, he has given them into your hand, and he has made you ruler over them all. You are this head of gold. So here we see that Nebuchadnezzar was the leader, the top. He was this head of this great image, head of gold. And this meant that the king was, he represented the entire Babylonian kingdom at that time. In fact, as it really states, he was the first real world tyrant or dictator. God had given him that position. See, God rules and he keeps order in this world. Otherwise, it would be total chaos. So he gives certain authority to human leaders to keep sort of a lid on things, so that's just not complete chaos. Under Nebuchadnezzar, Babylon was the first of these four ruling world empires, as we know. And the name Babylon is actually permanently stamped upon the entire system of humanly devised and demonically inspired governments. Babylon. We are told to come out of Babylon, the system that rules in the darkness of men's hearts today. And this system will reach all the way down from Nebuchadnezzar all through down through history to the time of Jesus Christ's return at his second coming. Now, after prophesying about another kingdom, he prophesied, continued to prophesy, talked about another kingdom that's coming, told him what's happening about all these parts of this image. The next one would be inferior to Babylon. Which would be the Medo-Persian Empire, the silver. And then the brass would be the third kingdom, the Greco-Macedonian Empire. And then Daniel described a fourth kingdom, the most villainous, the most vicious of them all, the Roman Empire. Let's read about that here in verse 40, Daniel 2, verse 40. Then the fourth kingdom. Again, Daniel is describing this to Nebuchadnezzar. Imagine him in the court telling this, and all his advisors all around, they're all hearing this. Tells him this. The fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, insomuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything. And like iron that crushes, this kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others. How powerful is it that it can do that? Whereas you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. Yet the strength of the iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay. Verse 42. And as the toes of the feet were partially of iron and partially of clay, so the kingdom shall be partially strong and partially fragile. As you saw iron mixed with ceramic clay, they will mingle with the seed of men. But they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. Verse 44. And the king, in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom, which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. So God has a plan, and he's going to work that plan, so we don't have to fear. We know God is with us. So this prophecy shows that there will be an end-time union of 10 nations that represent those 10 toes of this great image. But this system won't last very long. It's going to meet its demise. It's going to be smashed into utter oblivion by the returning, conquering Jesus Christ. Let's go ahead several chapters to Daniel. Now, Daniel 7, verse 1. Daniel 7, verse 1. You know, in the second chapter of Daniel, we saw that God had given Daniel understanding of the king's dream. We just read about that just now. Later, God gave Daniel himself a dream, which he carefully wrote down, and which forms chapter 7, which we'll read about now. So this was during Belshazzar's reign, during the end of the dominance and supremacy of the Babylonian Empire. Here in verse 1 of chapter 7, we read this. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream, and a dream and visions in his head while on his bed. We read a little bit of this earlier, but that was just to help you understand that both Daniel and John had the same vision, a very similar vision. Verse 2, Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet, like a man. And a man's heart was given to it. And suddenly another beast, a second, like a bear, it was raised up on one side and had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And they saw thus to it, arise, devour much flesh. This is a murderous creature. Verse 6, after this I looked, and there was another, like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. And then again, we'll read what we read earlier, verse 7. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So we read that. We're just reviewing that section right there. Let's go back here. The first beast he saw was like a lion with eagle's wings, and it stood on its feet as a man does, and had the heart of a man. Now again, this represented Nebuchadnezzar. Again, he was the first dictator of the world, empire, but he had a heart of a man. He wasn't like a beast. I mean, he was a beast, but he wasn't the wicked, evil ones that we're talking about that came after him. Well, that empire was destroyed by the Medo-Persian armies under Cyrus the Great. That took place in October 538 BC. And the second kingdom, represented by the chest and arms of silver. And that great image that we saw was a bear. This was a bear, and it ruled over the known world at that time. Then the third was a leopard-like beast, as he described, which had four wings of a fowl on its back, and this represented Alexander's Greco-Macedonian Empire. And like all tyrants, Alexander had officers. He had governors in various parts of his kingdom. And they plotted against him. They wanted to take over. They liked power. So when Alexander died, his kingdom was divided into four pieces. Again, as we read in Daniel 7, verse 6, let's go ahead and read this again. After this, I looked, and there was another beast like a leopard, which had on its back four wings like a bird. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. Then in verse 7, as we also read moments ago, Daniel described the Roman Empire, a fourth beast, terrible and dreadful, exceedingly strong, as we read. So looking back in history from our day to day, we don't really need to guess what these four beasts represented. Rather, we can actually look at what happened in world history from ancient time up until our time today. And world history proves, and many biblical scholars and commentaries agree, that Nebuchadnezzar's image represented the four successive world-dominating empires from Babylon all the way to Rome. And that's made clear in verse 17. Let's read that. Let's go ahead to verse 17 of Daniel 7. These great beasts, which are four kings which arise out of the earth. Four kings representing these empires. But then look at verse 18. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom. The kingdom of what? The kingdom of God. And possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. The church of God, the people of God, will be protected, and God will see that they are brought into the kingdom, and they will overcome, and they will rule in the great kingdom of God that's coming. So you are the only one that can prevent yourself from being there. Now keep that in mind as time goes on, because it's not pleasant and not pretty as to what's coming, but you don't have to fear. You don't have to fear. You just have to be strong. And not strong because of anything you do. is strong in the Lord, in the power of his might, as the Bible tells us. So Daniel's prophecy of the fourth beast, again, identified as the Roman Empire, it's going to come to an end when Jesus Christ installs the kingdom of God on earth. Now let's look at the following amazing, really amazing passage here. So Daniel was, you know, he was like shocked as to what happened in this dream and what he remembered about it. But he was very curious about this fourth kingdom. Very curious about it. He asks right here in verse 19. Daniel 7, verse 19. Then I wish to know the truth about this fourth beast. It was so critical, terrible. What is the truth about this? And he says, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its nails of bronze, which devoured, broke in pieces, and trampled the residue with its feet. He's repeating what he stated before. Verse 10, and 10 horns which were on its head, and the other horn which came up before which 3 fell, namely that horn. Now this is later identified as a little horn, and we're going to discuss that shortly here. This little horn, this horn, which had eyes and a mouth which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than his fellows. Verse 21, I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints, the people of God, and prevailing against them until the Ancient of Days came, Jesus Christ, and a judgment was made in favor of the saints. Remember that now? In favor of the saints, a judgment was made. The saints of the Most High, and the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. We just read about that. The saints will possess the kingdom. It's going to happen. So what is this fourth beast? It's actually a continuing Roman system that had various revivals down through history. It has risen and fallen along with this little horn, which we'll describe, who speaks evil and terribly persecutes the people of God. Indeed, as we just read, this dreadful fourth bestial empire rises from the ashes of history and continues up until the installation of God's kingdom on the earth. It's going to happen in the future. So this coming beast superpower, or as I said earlier, hyperpower, will be a resurrected descendant of the previous fourth empire, be just a reincarnation of it, rising up out of the ashes. Thought it was dead, but here it comes, rising up out of the sea of people again. It held widespread power at that time. It's going to do so in an even greater power and way in the future. And Daniel's prophesying about this corrupt Roman configuration. There's a lot more to it. It doesn't end there. In fact, if you'll notice, Daniel reiterates over and over again about how vicious and fierce this beast is going to be. He tells us that. It's important we know that, because as God's people, you're going to face this head on. Are you prepared for it? This evil, vicious thing in your face? How are you going to deal with it? With your own human strength, or with the very faith, strength, and patience of God? Do you need to know these things? See, that's why God gives us prophecy, so we can be aware of what's ahead. We can know what our enemy is going to do. We can know how to outsmart him. And it's not by any human smarts that we have. It's going to be by the very faith, strength, and understanding of God the Father, Jesus Christ. Verse 23. Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all other kingdoms. It shall devour the whole earth. Trample it and break it in pieces. This is the third time he's described it this way. That's reiterating something very important. And devour the whole earth, trample it and break it in pieces. The ten horns are ten kings. He's describing this for us. We don't have to be, it doesn't have to be a mystery to us. The ten horns are ten kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the first ones, and shall subdue three kings. He shall speak pompous words against who? The Most High. Shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and law. Then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time and time and half of times. So, I just said earlier, you're going to face the onslaught. It's going to be a 3.5-year period. That's what, when you see time, a time, that means a year. Time, 3 years and a half. Be prepared. Prepare yourself for this through faith. That's how you're going to do it, have to do it. But the court shall be seated, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it forever. Then the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High. You. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all his dominions shall serve and obey him. So again, here's proof that this fourth beast, this world-ruling power and its various revivals from the dead, continues all the way up until Christ's second coming. And these scriptures show that the ten horns of Daniel 7 are, again, ten successive governments. These horns, when you see the word horn, it's talking about a government. These are ten revivals of the Roman Empire down through history right to our time today. Now, what is the identity? You know, we talked about this little horn before. What is its identity? We need to know about that. Read about that here in verse 20. Let's reread these verses again. 20 and 21. We've read it before. Let's read it again to refresh ourselves. Then the ten horns which came, ten horns that were on its head, and the other horn, this other horn we're talking about now, which came up before the three fell, namely that horn which had eyes and a mouth which spoke pompous words, whose appearance is greater than his fellows. I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them. So here is a horn which has eyes like a man. It has a mouth speaking blasphemous things, who corrupts times and law, and who aggressively persecutes the saints, the people of God. What is this horn? This little horn that looks great. I mean, it just looks great. But he has so much power, this tiny little horn, so to speak. Throughout the scriptures, again, a horn is symbolic of a government authority. So remember that. Let's go to Revelation 13, verse 11 now. Revelation 13, verse 11. And this is where we began with today. We're going to learn a little bit more about the beast and this little horn now. So, again, what is this little horn that antagonistically harasses and oppresses God's saints? Revelation 13, verse 11. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and it had two horns like a lamb, and spoke like a dragon. So here's a government which appears outwardly Christ-like, like a lamb. Christ is called the Lamb of God. So he appears lamb-like on the outside. It's got those lamb-like characteristics on the outside. Kind of a easygoing guy, perhaps, at first. kind of likable person, maybe. Revelation 13, verse 12. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence. So he's a powerful man, powerful individual, ruling in a government. He's got as much authority as the beast, as this secular ruler. And this is the key scripture to in understanding what this is about to occur. This lamb-like, yet internally malicious beast, he utilizes the economic, industrial, and military power of the first beast. He has the beast, they work hand and glove, and this little horn, this lamb-like beast, employs the power of the first beast. They work hand and glove. And what does he do? Continuing here in verse 12, he says, and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. This is a two-horned second beast. And he causes, in other words, the Greek word is poio, which means, it tells us here it causes, but it actually means demands. He demands, or he forces people to worship the first beast. Forces them to do this. Remember that. Also, as the next verse points out, this second beast can bring about phenomenal miracles and wonders. Let's read about that here in verse 13, Revelation 13. Talking about the little beast, the lamb-like, outside looking, you know, kind of a nice guy perhaps on the outside, but inside, just boiling over, mad, angry, hateful. Verse 13, he performs great signs. This is what he can do. So that even fire comes down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast. Who granted him these signs? Granted him this power? Satan, the devil. And he's doing them in the sight of the beast. In other words, the beast is fine with it. Okay? Telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image. An image is a replica or a copy, an exact counterpart, I should say, to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. So that the beast had died in the past, it's resurrected now, it's alive and well on the earth. This is speaking about the future. So there, here, this small beast is like a replica of that bestial system. It's got similar ways and means of carrying out its objectives. Hold your place there in Revelation 13 and turn to 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 3 now. 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 3. So this beast, it can perform these miracles, it can do wonders and signs. What kind of beast is it? It's a religious it's not a secular government, it's a religious government led by this human leader who is driven and stimulated by none other than Satan the devil. This human religious leader corresponds with what the Apostle Paul called the mystery of lawlessness in his warning to the church about the man of sin. As we read here in 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 3, let no one deceive you. Who's he speaking to? He's speaking to us, the church of God, the saints of God. Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will come, that day will not come unless a falling away comes first, and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition. He's got a lot of titles, doesn't he? man of sin, son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. This man proclaims himself as God. Paul writes to us here. Verse 7. For this, the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Only he who now restrains will do so until he is taken out of the way. And then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. So he won't live. He's going to meet his demise sometime. He's going to do a lot of damage in the meantime. Verse 9, the coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan. And that, again, we've made that clear from the very beginning. With all power, signs, and lying wonders. These wonders are lying wonders. They're not, they're just deceptive. They're real. But they're there to deceive people, to keep people locked in this way of thinking that they've created in the world at that time. So here we have this human leader empowered by the devil himself, an extremely strong and influential religious leader who actually asserts himself to be very God in the eyes of all people. He is a hegemonic and dominant father figure of a powerful religious organization. He is the little horn of Daniel 7. He is the lamb-like beast of Revelation 13. He is the man of sin that we just read about in 2 Thessalonians. He is the false prophet of Revelation 19, verse 20. He is called the Antichrist in 1 John 2, verse 18. So what are we talking about here? What religious body and its spiritual leader fulfills this very description? Let me read to you from Halley's Bible Handbook, page 1783. It says the following. The papacy arose on the ruins of the Roman Empire, in the name of Christ, occupying the throne of the Caesars. Revival of the image. Remember I said an exact replica of the Roman government system is installed and rules in this organization. The image of the Roman Empire inheriting the spirit thereof. It goes on, it says, the ghost of the Roman Empire comes to life in the garb of Christianity. It brought itself to power through the prestige of Rome and the name of Christ, and by shrewd political alliances, and by deception, and by armed force. By force and bloodshed, it maintained itself in power. Through a large part of its history, the papacy, by the sale of ecclesiastical, meaning religious, offices, and its shameless traffic in indulgences, has received vast fortunes, vast revenues that enabled it to maintain for much of the time the most luxurious court in Europe. Remember it said earlier that it looked really great, looked really fine, dressed and the best. So this coming future second beast of Revelation will again possess titanic, immense satanic powers, incredible powers. It's going to produce awe-inspiring miracles and signs and deceptive wonders, as we read about in 2 Thessalonians 2. And vast numbers of people, millions, millions upon millions and millions of people, are going to be deceived. Those even who had little belief in God or religion, they're going to begin to believe. They're going to say, wait a minute, is this God come to the earth? Is this God for real? And they're going to see all these things taking place. They're going to be deceived by this unexplainable phenomena. There's no way to explain it other than God has come down. He's here to bring peace to the earth. So a lot of atheists will turn and become followers of this man and this system. They're going to begin to believe. And all this will occur due to the powerful demon-inspired combination of state, church and state. They're going to work hand in hand. This powerful secular beast that we've been talking about as well, and this great religious authority, they're going to cooperate hand in glove. They're going to work together very strongly. In fact, they will work so closely together that each will demand that others worship the other. One's going to say you've got to worship the other, and the other says you've got to worship. They're both going to be worshipped. The beast and the false prophet are going to both be worshipped at that time. Indeed, these two deceptive, sinister leaders are both esteemed, both revered. They're venerated as if God. At least one feels like he is God. So this symbiotic relationship, they've got to have it to be able to work together and to deceive everybody. Let's go back to Revelation 13 now to see this very fact. Revelation 13. Revelation 13, verse 15. He, speaking about the first beast, was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast. This religious leader and his religious organizational governmental system, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. So in other words, the beast is going to say that anybody that doesn't worship this lamb-like God being, so to speak, that they feel has come down, you don't deserve to live. That's what he's saying here. You should be killed if you don't worship this beast. That's how powerful this is going to be. That's how damaging this is going to be in the future. So again, just as the beast leader is to be worshipped, the religious leader is going to be worshipped as well. In fact, note this, that if people don't worship this man, again, just remember, they are to be killed. So if anyone dares to go against this edict, your life is in danger. Remember that as well. So again, working in concert, the false prophet and the beast will have absolute authority over what part of the world they will dominate at that time. And let's be clear about this too, that what a tyrant wants, a tyrant gets. Remember that. To fully consolidate his authority, he issues an edict to ensure that he's going to have complete and total, unconditional, and unchallenged control. No matter what a person's social status is going to be at the time, he or she must comply without question, or they will not be able to work, or they will not be able to eat. And they have the threat of death hanging over them at every moment. Let's read about this here in Revelation 13, verse 16. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, doesn't matter how rich or poor you are, how great you are, whether you're free or slave, and remember slave, because that's going to be important to remember that as well, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. His number is 666. So although the Bible doesn't explicitly tell us what the mark of the beast is or how it's going to be enforced, whether it's going to be enforced by some advanced surveillance system. You know, we got high technology that's available today. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. Could be some other method that's going to happen. It will be used as a means of identifying those people who refuse to obey the orders of this tyrant. The beast's declaration of his mark will be a means of weeding out opposition and frightening and intimidating anyone who would dare disagree with his policies. That's what stands ahead of us. It will be a means of sweeping up all of his adversaries who will anyone that rebels against him. It'll be a massive dragnet to weed out those throughout his entire empire. He doesn't want any opposition. Who will these rebels be? We'll cover that important element and much more next time when we return to part two of the sermon entitled The Beast, the Future, and You. I'll be back in 3 weeks. God willing.